Welcome to episode 374 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Boy, Richard, you know, I literally just got back from vacation.
Yeah, no kidding. You're back to your own crazy schedule now that you're back home. Hope you enjoyed the time off.
I did, fortunately. I very much enjoyed the time off. But yeah, straight back at it. I've been home for 4 hours, but that's not actually true because I got home and had to go do, you know, kids' sports activity stuff pretty much as soon as I got home. So yeah, I've really been home for an hour, but fortunately we got most of the stuff planned yesterday.
And your vacation was so busy that we were roughly 25 miles apart at times over the weekend, and we didn't even get a chance to see each other.
No, it was, well, you know, it sounded like it was going to be a really packed weekend, but fortunately, it was really rainy on the East Coast this weekend.
Oh, yeah, it did damper some plans, no pun intended.
So, a little bit more relaxing of a weekend than I anticipated, and that's a good thing. So, it was good, but yes, I definitely wish that you and I could have found some time to get together, but perhaps next time. Anyway, let's get on with the show here. We've got a little bit of listener feedback here. These emails were sent in to our inbox at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Richard, why don't you take this first one from longtime emailer, Tim.
Tim from Florida. I'm assuming that's what FL means. So he has basically a really long email message that kind of schools me on why Microsoft didn't manage to get NFC payment stuff going until now. We'll get to that. And I'm going to summarize it dramatically. I don't mean that I'm going to have a dramatic summary of it.
Ooh, I want that. Let's do that.
I mean, severely, I'm going to summarize it. But so he starts out, he says, "Hi, Josh and Richard. I just listened to the latest episode. Let's go with Triumph. And I wanted to respond to some of what was said about Windows 10 Mobile. A short disclaimer, I'm an unapologetic Windows fan, and I do get that has an effect on my outlook of the situation. Hey, you know, I can't fault anyone there. I'm a fan of some Windows things, some Apple things. Josh is a fan of all things Windows and now Android, but we'll get to that later.
No. I am not a fan of all things Android. That's not fair to say.
All right. Well, so first off, Tim basically provided us with some background on the NFC payments issue. And he does recount that it was back in June of 2012, 4 years ago, that they first announced that they would be supporting NFC payment. The problem was that the wallet technology out there wasn't quite there yet. And so to make this happen, they had to decide, all right, well, how are we going to do this? Whose system are we going to use? And Microsoft chose to go with the then naively named ISIS system, which was a partnership between the carriers. It was later renamed as SoftCard, smartly renamed as SoftCard, which then got bought by Google, which then kind of went nowhere. And at one point in time, they actually had this at a point where it could work, but it wasn't really adopted. And so meanwhile, all this stuff has come along to enable Apple Pay and Android Pay. And now Microsoft had to completely rethink their strategy, and they adopted the same technology that they're using. So I get it. I understand. I guess my point is that for whatever reasons, Microsoft continues to make bets on partnerships that drag them down or make marketing or product decisions that bring them late to market than compared to everybody else. And I think that hurts them. And it's unfortunate because this is something that they had ready And they, you know, they basically had this before others were ready to do it, as Microsoft often is, earlier than the market was ready to have them.
Yeah, that's a pretty common story with Microsoft. They were first on tablets, they were first on smartphones, they were first on lots of things. They just didn't do it all that well when they were first at it.
So he also talked a little bit about Kids Corner, and he mentioned that, as you had indicated, Kids Corner and Apps Corner had a lot of overlap, and so he's not surprised that they ended up killing one of them. But also, as you indicated, it's not an even swap. So there are things that are going to be missing. And he talks a little bit about how certain capabilities that were available in Windows Phone 8 now get handled differently through the Windows 10 software. It's not exactly equal now, but the similar capabilities exist in what you can do. So that's good. Now, I'll stop summarizing and kind of get to his exact words. He says, I'll admit that there are a lot of negatives facing the Windows 10 ecosystem, but it's not as bad as some would have you believe. Yes, we do not have the apps and accessories that others have, but it's definitely not as bad a situation as those that are still using Media Center.
Ooh. I'm not sure that I agree with that, but
them's
we'll keep going.
Fighting words.
Actually, why don't we stop right there? Because
we're cutting this off right now.
Well, no, just let's respond to all of this Windows Phone stuff before we get onto the other part of his email. So,
okay.
You summarized perfectly everything that he said about NFC on the Kids Corner side. And I don't know if I stated this all that well last week, but I feel like what Microsoft did was said, we've got Kids Corner, we've got Apps Corner. These are two features that are really, really similar. One is geared towards the consumer. One is geared more towards enterprise and business. Which one should we keep? Oh, right. We don't care about consumers on Windows Phone anymore. Let's go with the enterprise one. And I think that that's going to be the story going forward with anything in a similar situation on the Windows Phone side. If it only makes sense for consumers, they're not going to put any more resources into that stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that was kind of my take on this when we talked about this last week.
So he also says that he thinks it's a worse situation, like Windows Phone is in a less bad situation than Media Center. I'm not entirely convinced that that's true. We've got Rye Guy in the chat asking, is Media Center dead yet? He hasn't kept up. And like we've been saying, it's not dead until the guide data is dead. And the guide data is not dead yet. So like, are there new add-ons and stuff coming out for Media Center anymore? Not really. But at its core usefulness, it's still there. And I think it's really easy. Like, I'm sure there are people screaming in their cars right now going, Josh, you say that Windows Phone is dead because it doesn't have third parties developing add-ins for it. Why isn't Media Center dead if it doesn't have third parties developing add-ins for it? Well, it's a different platform, and smartphones don't survive if they don't have third party development. I just think it's a very different scenario. My TV, you know, using Media Center on my TV, it still does all of the important things that I needed to do perfectly fine. It doesn't have the extra stuff anymore, but that to me doesn't seem like that big of a deal.
I think there's also like a life cycle difference between these two things. Windows Media Center is essentially, well, not essentially, it is desktop software, which typically has a life of years and years. As long as there are services that support it, it can live on, and people tend to use it for a very long time. Windows Phone is one of those things that it kind of has to turn over every year, or every 2 years, maybe, as far as devices are concerned. And if the support just isn't coming at the pace that's necessary to support that, and on the consumer side, certainly it will not be, because they're probably just not going to be doing anything more for consumers. You could argue they've cut both platforms off at the knees to some extent, but I think Media Center will continue to live on longer than a phone platform that no longer has support for consumers.
Agreed. And I guess I should put one more caveat in there to be a little bit more specific on what I think is still alive with Media Center. And that is, it's alive as a linear TV DVR system. Obviously, the industry is starting to go in a different direction there, but that's still a huge, huge focus for how most people are consuming TV. And it does that phenomenally well.
Okay, and now we're getting a little bit of ribbing in the chat, because I think it is also worth mentioning, yes, we understand that technically Windows Media Center is no longer a product that Microsoft supports or makes available to consumers. Windows phones are. We get that.
Although that, even that's not entirely accurate, because Windows 7 is still a supported OS for a few more years.
It's supported, but they are still actively developing software for Windows phones.
Right.
They're not still actively developing software for Media Center.
Right. They basically stopped developing for Media Center in like 2009.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Can I get back?
Yes. All right.
Josh, your discussion of Android TV with James. No, this is both of us. Our discussion of Android TV with James Montemagno was interesting, he says, and it would be difficult for his ecosystem, but he likes the promise of the setup that James was talking about. He says, I did have a couple of questions that I thought others would benefit from, so I figured I'd ask you or have James or others respond. All right, and we're going to have to reach out to James, because we don't have answers to any of these questions, but here they are. Subscriptions via apps. Since so many things are being included at the platform level from the live TV interface, can you subscribe to a particular show? That is, for Richard, does having the CBS app installed allow him to subscribe to Big Brother? Hey! And just get alerted when a new episode is available. Well, that's pretty much every other night. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I don't know. We'll try and find out for you. He also asked, does it allow for profiles so my content or shows don't get mixed in with the kids' stuff? And he also asks, does it have any parental controls so kids can't access things that we feel that they shouldn't? We don't know the answers to any of these.
Nope.
But we'll reach out to James and see if we can get some for you. Or if other listeners have Android TV experience and you know the answers, we encourage you to get in touch with us. He says, sorry for being so long-winded, but I figured it's been a while since I sent anything in, so this is to make up for my absence. Thanks, Tim. It's good to hear back from you.
And hopefully I will be able to answer some or most of those questions by next week, because now that I'm home and not on vacation, I might actually get a chance to play with that NVIDIA Shield that I bought. And
I'm
hoping to do that this week.
When are you doing that exactly? Okay.
Right. It'll happen.
Why don't you read the next message in the meantime?
All right. This is from Ron. He says, I know Windows Phone is in a coma and on life support, and the big names like Ed Bott, Mary Jo Foley, and Paul Theroux have moved on to Android. But when Josh Pollard gets an Android phone, I say it's time to pull the plug.
Wow. That is serious clout. Yeah,
I guess. He says, I'd like to hear about your experiences converting from Windows to Android, as I will shortly follow in your footsteps. I have two Windows Phone 8.1 phones, 5 Windows computers, including 2 Windows Media Center PCs with a Seton tuner, and 2 tablets. And I'm completely ensconced in the Microsoft ecosystem. So tell us how a Microsoft fanboy is getting along with Android, and keep up the good work. Ron, this is a great email, and I think you're giving me far more credit than I deserve. But I can't answer this in the way that it fully deserves to be answered tonight. It's something that I was actually thinking about a lot while driving from here to the East Coast and back, but I don't really feel like I have this fully fleshed out in my head yet. So I'm going to punt on this one, and I'll be back next week with a far better discussion on this, because this is more than just a response to an email. This is really a bigger discussion about, you know, we've seen a lot of things changing in the Microsoft ecosystem, especially for consumers across mobile, desktop, Xbox, all over the place. Things have been changing a lot just in the last couple of months. So I want to really get all my thoughts together and really, really focus on a solid answer to this question. But Ron, thank you for sending this in. It's coming hopefully next week, and as best it can even be answered, of course, since we don't obviously know the future of what Microsoft and all of the other guys have planned. But as best we can see, I think there's some interesting changes coming, and it could cause some shakeup for us big Microsoft fans. But that's not necessarily a bad thing either.
And that wraps this week's portion of questions our readers ask that we don't answer.
Entertainment 2.0, avoiding your questions since 2009. Oh, that's not entirely true. We answer them when we can, and we'll be back. Hopefully next week we're going to be able to answer all of these. If I hadn't been on vacation, maybe I could have answered them this week.
All right. Well, that is going to be it for our feedback this week. Two ways you can get feedback to us. You can send us email or voice messages as recordings to entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. That is what Tim did. Or you can use the contact form on our website and send us messages that way. And that is what Ron did.
All right. So let's move on to our news for the week. And starting off with some video news, the Xbox, if you're on the preview, which I don't even know what they're calling this. And I always struggle with this every single week, what to call this thing. If you're getting the preview builds on your Xbox One, you can also get a preview of the movies and TV app, but it's going to require a little bit of extra work for you here. So basically what they're doing is replacing I believe it's called Xbox Video still on, or just Video on the Xbox One. They're getting rid of that app, replacing it with Movies and TV, which is a universal Windows platform app, which is largely, you know, it's very similar to the Movies and TV app that's available on Windows 10 currently. It's not completely identical. They, of course, have to make some changes to make it work better on the Xbox. And Windows Central has a surprisingly good and detailed review of what's different in this app and what's good, what isn't. Which was really nice because I wasn't home this weekend to try it on my Xbox. So first off, if you want this app, you will have to do a little bit of work to get it. And this is all assuming that you're getting the preview builds, because you can't get it if you're not on the preview builds currently. If you are, uninstall the current app, then go to the store, and depending on when you do this search, do a search for Movies and TV. If that doesn't find anything, there was apparently a bug with how it was listed in the store. It was using the UK name for this app, which never understood why this app has a different name in the UK, but it's called Films and TV in the UK as opposed to Movies and TV.
Okay.
Whatever. So do a search for that. That'll get it installed for you, and that's how you get going. So one of the biggest differences between this app and what used to be available on the Xbox One, or maybe I should say what's currently on the Xbox One, is almost all of the store functionality is removed from this app, because all of that functionality is already in the store that's on the Xbox One. So there's no reason to have it in both places. At least that's their line of thinking. Now, what a lot of you might be thinking is, well, that sounds great in practice, but it takes forever switching between an app and the store and going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Well, it sounds like, according to Windows Central's review of this, that hopping in and out of the store and this app is actually a pretty quick transition. So, like, you might select a category or whatever and say, you know, maybe you're looking at a particular actor and you want to see all of their movies and stuff that they've been in. It'll take you to that in the store. And just hitting B, you know, to go back like you can in apps, will actually take you straight back into the Movies and TV app. So it sounds like they've got that experience working out pretty well. So that's really good. In terms of the rest of the app, a lot of it is going to look and feel very familiar if you've used this app on Windows 10. The really interesting thing is that they've kept a lot of the same navigation concepts and things like that. So it's got the hamburger menu, which we're used to seeing hamburger menus and things like that, but it actually uses that menu button on your Xbox One controller. The button that we normally consider to just be like a start button, it's actually a menu button that actually opens the hamburger menu, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Except that like none of the other Xbox apps do that.
Right, because doesn't that bring up like a pop-up menu in the other apps?
Well, a lot of times, it kind of depends. Like a lot of times it just doubles as like whatever A does, that button also does, because it's treated like a start button or a selection button. But in this case, it actually works as a menu button. So I think I'm okay with this as long as we see this type of functionality and usage consistent across more of the apps. But right now, it's completely inconsistent with the way everything else works on the Xbox One. So I'm not so sure that I like that. Plus, I mean, having not actually used it myself yet, I guess I can't fully speak to this, but it seems like it might be weird and potentially more effort to get around that way, but maybe it's not. I'm not sure. So there's that. And then the other weird thing is, like, let's say, you know, because this app will show your movie collection also, of course. Let's say you wanted to get rid of one of your movies from the collection. On the PC, you would take your mouse and you would hover over that movie, and then you would right click on it and get a little pop-up, you know, menu, a context menu to view properties or delete and, you know, things like that. You do the same thing using the view button on the Xbox One controller, which is that other button that looks like the square within the square. It looks like it's called the restore button in the Windows task or in the title bar when you've got the minimize, maximize, and close, that middle one when a window is maximized. It looks like that one, that button that no one ever knew the name for on the Xbox One controller. It's called the view menu or the view button. And that's what it does. It basically simulates a right click. That sounds weird and completely undiscoverable.
That's what I would expect the menu button to do. I'm not kidding. That's what I thought you were talking about.
Yeah, I could see that. I think that I would be more like, I expected it to be like press Y on the controller to do this or something like that, because that's normally more consistent with how we would do things like that, I guess, or the layout would just be more hierarchical. Like, you wouldn't get a little pop-up context menu. You would select the movie, and on the page that shows all of its details, you would just have a button in there that says delete from my collection or any of that other stuff. It seems kind of weird to have a pop-up context menu at all on your TV, I think.
Yeah, although I think we're starting to see this in other platforms. We're starting to see this in Apple TV. I think that I've seen this in some of the apps on the Fire TV. So this doesn't surprise me all that much, but it seems like a clunky implementation.
Yeah.
Similarly, I have not tried this myself.
So maybe one of the other things worth pointing out is that there's a lot of Windows Central kept calling them ads. I'm not sure if they're ads, having not actually seen them, and they don't really show this in their screenshots, but they mentioned that like there are sections for recommended content all over the place, including in the views of the app for your own collection of media, which in your own collection, it seems a little weird to be showing recommended content to me, maybe not. And as long as it isn't too spammy, or addy, you know, doesn't look too much like just straight up advertisements, then maybe it's okay. But it does just seem a little bit weird to be in there. They also mentioned that casting support, like if you're going to cast from a Windows phone to an Xbox, that apparently that is working significantly faster than it used to work before. And hopefully that means that it's working far more consistently. Not sure. But I also don't know how many people are actually doing that anyway. And then one last thing that they pointed out is that it doesn't have the ability to download movies for offline playback. And I understand that offline playback is a scenario that maybe doesn't make as much sense in the living room. But if you have bandwidth caps, it does make sense. Like, I do rip and download my movies so that they can be, especially the kids' movies, because the kids want to watch these things all the time. And I don't want to stream it over and over and over again. Let's hit, take that bandwidth hit once, and then they can watch it as many times as they want without me going up against my cap, which I'm constantly hitting. So I would like to see this, although I'm sure it's at the bottom of their priority list to add to the Xbox, because I don't think there are very many people that care that much about having that functionality. So overall, some nice improvements there. It sounds like maybe a little bit of weirdness with navigation and things like that, but it's preview. And it sounds like there's some other, you know, weirdness with some of the UI stuff. But again, it's all preview. This isn't a finalized app. If you've got access to it, check it out. Use the feedback hub and give Microsoft the feedback that they need to make this app better. Because, you know, while we've had plenty of bad things to say about Microsoft lately, you can't say that they're not listening to users. They very much have been listening to user feedback across Windows 10 on all of the platforms.
Selectively.
I mean, where it fits in with their broader strategies, I think they've mostly been listening.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, still a little bit bruised about the DVR.
Right. You know, I had a friend, his name is Joe, and he listens to the show. He sent me a message over the weekend. He's like, look at this Xbox media remote that I found on Amazon. It's not available yet. It's got a, you know, will be available December 31st, 2016, which is obviously just a placeholder date because they have no idea when it's going to come out. But it basically, like, you take the standard Xbox One media remote that has been available forever, make it a lot taller, add full playback control buttons at the top, add a DVR button and live TV button. That's what this remote looks like. And it looks really awesome. And it's like, this would be fantastic if that functionality was actually coming to the Xbox One. But since it's almost definitely not, I guess there's no reason to buy that remote.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, is that it for the preview? You're going to dive into it this week and get back with us next week?
You know, with all that other free time that I've got. Yeah, totally.
All right. Well, we'll see how you do when we talk next Tuesday.
Right.
In the meantime, let's talk a little bit about audio. In the chat room, I happen to see that some people are talking about how much they hate iTunes. And there really should be a support group. Because I am so in this camp, but I am kind of glued to the iTunes ecosystem. And the primary reason isn't because I'm on a Mac. It's because that's what my car uses. Mm. Any vehicle that has audio integration, it's typically through the iTunes interface on an iPhone or iDevice. But if you're a Windows person, and there's no way you're using iTunes on Windows, because you shouldn't, and you've come to realize that Windows 10 and Winamp don't play nice together, well, there's a new alternative out there called Dopamine. Now, what you may be thinking when I say the word dopamine is that reward center in your brain that has to do with addiction, you know, like kind of the way that James feels when he goes to McDonald's because they have specials on the McRib. But this is actually an app. It's an app for music. It's a music player designed to work with large collections of music. And from the write-up that we've seen about it, it's a lot faster than iTunes. It handles things as efficiently as Winamp did. And right now, they've really optimized it for the Windows look and feel and the Windows platform. So it fits well in the Windows environment, either on a tablet or on the desktop. There's not a phone version for it yet, but they are working on that. And they are really focused on your music. This is not about playing music in the cloud. In fact, they don't really have any cloud services hooked in yet. They don't have the ability to download artwork, but they're working on that. But from the you know, perspective of someone who collects music still, I know I have streaming services, but I have a lot of music that I can't get on all those streaming services. So I still do actually continue to curate and maintain my own music collection. And I still download anything that I purchase because I don't trust that it's going to be in the cloud when I want to listen to it. And this is perfect for something like that. So we'll have a link in the show notes to this. And if you're looking for an alternative music player because you're tired of the, what is it now, 20-year-old Winamp? Thank you, AOL, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
There is something newer and better now.
This looks really nice.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like the Zune client in some ways.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was actually a pretty good music player.
It really was. And this is not a Windows 10 specific app. This will work on Windows 7 and Windows 8 also. So it's not a UWP. So you can use this on all of those Windows platforms. So check this out. I might, well, see, the problem is that for my music collection, I just have it all. This is going to be completely counter to what I was just saying about videos. I keep all of my music on OneDrive and then just stream it. But streaming music uses up a lot less bandwidth than video. And I'm mostly doing that at work. So, I don't want to put my entire music collection on my work computer. I just want to listen to it occasionally. So that's where I would use this app, but I'm also not going to download my entire music library to my work computer.
Right. Yeah. See, for me, I still have everything up on my media server. So I could use this for playing stuff around the house, you know?
Yeah, I will download this at home. I just, for whatever reason, don't tend to listen to my own music as much at home, which sounds really weird now that I say it out loud. All right, well, let's move on to some gaming news. And I know we've been really heavy on the gaming news of late. It's not going to dominate the show tonight, though. There's just not as much news this week, which I know makes people like Richard really happy to hear. But maybe the biggest news, and this kind of goes to show you what kind of week this was in gaming news. I think probably the biggest story of the week, one of the biggest titles of the Xbox 360, Red Dead Redemption, is finally coming to the Xbox One via backwards compatibility. And it's coming Friday, July 8th. So probably around the time that you're listening to this episode, you're going to be able to play Red Dead Redemption on your Xbox One. The other thing that's really awesome about that is that the other big news in Xbox this week is that right now they're having their huge summer ultimate game sale. And guess what? Red Dead Redemption is one of the games that's on sale. So if you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber and you don't already own Red Dead Redemption, you can buy it digitally for $7.50 and play it on your Xbox One come Friday. So that's really cool. I wanted to tear in a little bit to the sale and just toss out some ideas for the games that looked the most interesting to me for what you might want to pick up during the sale. So most of the Assassin's Creed games are on sale. A couple of the Batman games are. The Call of Duty games are on sale, which those frankly don't actually go on sale very often. The latest Call of Duty is 40% off, so that's kind of a big deal. Doom, which came out like a month ago, is 30% off. That's nice. Fallout 4 is down to $30. So is Halo 5. Most of the Lego games, you know, especially if you're into playing video games with your kids, most of those Lego games are on sale. Here's one that I've mentioned, about a billion times now. Life is Strange is on sale. The entire thing, all five episodes, $8. Go buy that game and play Life is Strange. You won't regret it. Mirror's Edge Catalyst, another game that just came out. It's on sale. It's only $36. Ori Definitive Edition, my game of the year last year. It's available for $13. Quantum Break, another game that just came out recently, down to $45. The Witcher 3 is again discounted to $25. The Division is on sale for about 30% off. Unravel, that fun, cute indie game published by EA just a couple of months ago, is half off, so that's only $10. And then on the 360 side, there's a ton of things for sale too. But the only two that really jumped out at me were Red Dead Redemption, of course, and Crackdown. I loved Crackdown, and it's only $5 right now in the sale. So if you never played Crackdown and you're interested in what all the hype is around Crackdown 3, go drop $5, play Crackdown. Unfortunately, I don't think Crackdown is backwards compatible, but drag your Xbox 360 out because it's so much fun. So much fun.
Cool. There's nothing in that list I'm going to buy.
Yeah, that's not surprising. Not surprising at all. All right. So the other really big news in the Microsoft space is that Microsoft finally announced when this anniversary update is finally going to come out. And we're going to hit this from the gaming side first. It's coming out August 2nd. So just a few days after the actual anniversary. The actual anniversary would be July 29th. I don't think anyone's going to... Well, that's not true. Someone's going to be mad about that, but they shouldn't be that silly. So on the Xbox One, you're getting that update again, on that same day, the same day that it's coming out on Windows, and spoilers, the same day it's coming out on Windows Phone, which is our next talk. But just wanted to really quickly recap what's coming. We're not going to dig into these here because we've been talking about all of these features that are coming in the anniversary updates across all of these platforms a ton as they've been coming out in these insider previews across all of the different platforms. So the main things coming to the Xbox side are Cortana support, of course, Play Anywhere once the games that support Play Anywhere come out, all of the new dashboard stuff that we've been talking about, and the new store stuff on the Xbox One, and confirmed this week, background audio finally coming to the Xbox One with the anniversary update. So we don't really know exactly what that looks like. We don't really know what apps that's going to work in, but I would expect that at the very least, Groove Music is going to support it. So you're going to be able to listen to your own music library, which is really the primary use case here anyway, I think. Listen to your own music while playing games and things like that. Hopefully apps like Pandora and some of the other music apps that are on the Xbox One will be updated quickly to also support that functionality, but we don't know for certain yet. All right, so that's it for the anniversary update on the Xbox side. Let's go to the more mobile, so the desktop and the actual mobile phone side of this. Again, all on August 2nd. So let's hit the desktop first. Again, we're not going to go into the details here, but lots of changes on the start screen / start menu. The action center is way better with notifications from web apps and things. Like if you're used to getting Facebook notifications from the web, those will appear in the action center, things like that. Enhancements to Cortana, a lot of enhancements to Edge, including extension support for Edge, lots of inking enhancements for those of you with like surfaces, and of course also some enhancements to Continuum, being able to use Continuum from a phone to a Windows 10 PC. And of course, the big missing feature, which I think we talked about last week. Messaging everywhere won't be everywhere. It won't be anywhere. So,
except for replies.
Right. And then it's also coming to mobile devices on August 2nd, right?
Is it?
It is, but, not really a lot of details about what that means or even what devices. I mean, rolling out these types of huge updates is tricky when it comes to mobile devices. So I imagine it's going to be coming to the 950, 950 XL, probably the 6. There's a 650, right? I know there's a 640. I think there's a 650. Those are the three main phones that are out now. I would think that all of those will get it. But if you've got an older phone, you know, like an Icon that just got Windows 10 last week, I don't know if you're going to get this anniversary update. We don't really know. I think we're going to have to wait a little bit longer to get final confirmation on what mobile devices will be getting this. But again, lots of the same features that we've talked about, with the big exception being messaging everywhere, won't be there.
I guess I feel kind of blind to what's really going to be in this update for Windows 10 Mobile. And I feel like it's a little bit disingenuous to suggest that this is of the same family or of the same caliber as the updates on the other platforms, if for no other reason that either they're still or they just finished rolling out the last of the devices that they're supporting just with plain old Windows 10.
Right. You know, I'm sure that there are other Windows phone diehards that are probably able to come up with a much longer list of things that are coming to Windows 10 Mobile than I can. But most of the updates to Windows 10 Mobile that have been coming through the insider previews over the last few months have really been bug fixes. At least that's how it's felt to me, with the one big, huge exception being messaging everywhere, which isn't coming.
Right.
So tap to pay is coming. You know, that'll be nice. But in terms of other really big things that are coming, I'm struggling to think of any.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. Well, August 2nd.
Right. For everything, basically.
And if you're running it on desktop or tablet and you haven't taken the upgrade to Windows 10, you have until the end of July to do that, right? What happens if you don't update it? Do you not even have an option to get this newer version? It's 3 days. It's 3 friggin' days. They couldn't just like bump you up to the new one.
It doesn't sound like it. You know, they said last year that they were going to make Windows 10 a free upgrade for Windows 7 and 8 users for a year. And it sounds like they're holding firm on that. You have until the 29th to get your free upgrade to Windows 10. And I don't really have a problem with that. I mean, it's not like Windows didn't, or Microsoft didn't make every possible, and many that they shouldn't have, effort to get people to upgrade. If you haven't upgraded to Windows 10 at this point, it's because you didn't want to. So I don't really see much of a reason for them to continue to offer this free upgrade when you've had all of this time to do it. Now, it would be nice. Like, I think it would be a nice sign of goodwill that, like, hey, this is the future, and hey, everybody who's on Windows 10, they're getting this next big update for free. So don't you want to be here where everything is free? Wouldn't that be a really nice place to be? Come and join us in free land. But if you don't want to be in free land, then I guess you're just not, you're not going to do that. And if you decide to go to Windows 10 eventually, which, unless you're planning to switch to OS 10 or Linux, you ought to just be jumping on the Windows 10 train at this point. I guess you're just stuck for a while, or you're going to have to pay for it. So make up your mind, or pay $120 after July 29th to upgrade.
Okay. All right. Seems weird. The gap of 3 days just seems so bizarre. I just don't understand that. All right. Well, we're still talking mobile, sort of. So let's talk again about the Nuance phone. And this is the device that we mentioned a couple weeks ago, because we learned that they were going to have a Kickstarter campaign. And that Kickstarter campaign has started. And so here's the deal. we now know what it's going to cost, and we now know when it's going to come out, ish. You know, it is Kickstarter. Now, this is the phone that lets you create kind of a custom experience with their Windows phone, because you have these snappable modular back things, and you use a top one and a bottom one to create a pair of these two custom things that makes each one even more unique. And you can start contributing at, if you want a phone, you could start at like $35 and just say, here's $35. I don't want anything in return. Or if you want a phone back, you could start at $250, except that sold out. So you could start at $270 and you'll get a phone with two custom back pieces. And when that runs out, it'll be $325. And when that runs out, it'll be $380. Those are the early bird prices, or you could get two of them for $650. Now, these prices seem good on the low end, not all that great on the high end, but the high end is pretty close to the market price. The market price is going to be $399. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, ignoring the obvious fact that it's a Windows phone, and I don't know that a lot of consumers are going to be looking to buy a Windows phone going forward.
And it's a Windows phone whose specs like 6 months ago were more interesting than they are today.
Well, yeah, that's where I was going with that, is that it's a mid-range phone. This is a 720p 5-inch display. It's got a Snapdragon 600 line. You know, it's not like it's a Snapdragon 820, 2 gigs of RAM. You know, this is absolutely a mid-range phone. It's not a high-end phone. I'm not paying $400 for a mid-range phone. I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed by the price. But so far, they have raised $107 of the $750,000 they're trying to raise through Kickstarter, and they have 34 days left as of the time of this recording. So who knows? They're doing okay. They're not doing great, but they're doing okay. If they were to continue to collect at this rate, they might actually hit that target. And as I mentioned, they are estimating a November 2016 arrival date. It's Kickstarter, so I would add a couple of months to that. I don't think we're going to see this until first quarter of 2017, personally.
But isn't this phone already available in Japan?
But not for our market.
Yeah, but if all they have to worry about is the radio stuff, then they've been able to work on that for months. So this is a Kickstarter campaign that I would have a lot more confidence in it actually hitting its release date. I don't think it's going to get funded, though. Do you?
I don't know. We'll have to see if they can get enough interest in this thing. I mean, basically, their unique value add is this customization, and that's it. And I don't know if that's enough to gain enough interest on a platform that, since the original phone came out, has more or less been put on life support.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you've got this on the Android side. You've got the Motorola flagship phones that you can do all of the crazy customizations with. And it's not a huge premium in terms of price to be able to do that for those phones. And this does seem like a premium price on a dying platform. So yeah, I unfortunately don't see this going forward. If this had happened 2 years ago, I would have been a lot more excited about this. But yeah, it didn't. And
even a year ago,
I would have been more excited about it. I still would have been disappointed that it's a mid-range phone instead of a high-end phone. Now, you do this with high-end specs at this price, I'd be all about it. Well, I wouldn't really, because it's still the dying platform thing. But high-end specs a year ago, and I would have been really excited about it.
Yeah. We'll see how they do.
Yep. All right. One last little interesting app update. Steam, the biggest platform for PC gaming. I didn't know where to put this story, whether this belonged under gaming or mobile. I think it makes sense here in mobile. They've finally released an official Steam app for Windows Phone. And when this first came out, I was like, okay, why? And why now? But it actually does make a little bit of sense. And that is because Steam is, you know, because people dump so much money into this, Steam takes security and privacy pretty seriously. And they've now put a lot of their functionality behind the ability to use a Steam Authenticator app on your phone to verify that you are who you say you are. And where this really comes in handy is, you know, when, and Richard, I know this is all news to you, but when you play games on Steam, you get, like, they have the concept of achievements just like Xbox Live does, but they also have these, like, trading card sort of things that you can get. I don't understand why, but people like to collect that crap, and they have a monetary value. People will buy them from you. I don't know why, but they do. So you can sell them when you get them, and usually it's just for pennies, but you can. And a couple of months ago, they changed it so that if you wanted to sell your cards or whatever they're called, if you wanted to sell them right away, you had to use their mobile authenticator app to really verify that you are who you say you are and that you do actually want to sell these things that you own that do actually have value, you know, legit
you realize
monetary value.
They're making that transaction harder than it is to log into my bank.
Well, yeah, but banks are notoriously terrible at security. Banks don't even have strict password requirements, let alone anything else. So that's been a thing for the past few months. Now, that's not to say that you can't sell without using a mobile authenticator app. You still can. But when you do, it's like, well, if you don't authenticate with the app, then we're not actually going to put this sale up for 2 weeks or, you know, something like that to give you time to say, no, it wasn't me that wanted to sell this stuff. So that's nice that you're finally going to be able to do that. If your only phone is a Windows phone, you'll be able to do that. The other thing that a lot of sites have pointed out is it's not a UWP. It's a Windows Phone 8.1 app. You know, why would they do this? You know, they've waited so long. Why not just make it a UWP? My thought is, why make it a UWP?
Yeah, it doesn't need to be. It's for your phone.
It only needs to run on phones. So there's no point in trying to do the extra effort to get it to run on other platforms. And as a UWP, that means it only runs on Windows 10 phones. And there's still a lot of, you know, relatively speaking, a lot of Windows Phone 8.1 devices out there. Now, Windows Phone 10 is not taking market share. You know, it's not over 50% yet for all Windows phones in use. So this makes total sense for this to just be an older Windows Phone 8.1 style app. Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, that's it for our gaming mobile / in there somewhere news. And in fact, that's it for our news. So let's quickly recap what we're doing in our entertainment centers. And I actually made some changes in my entertainment center. Two things. Here's a really random one. I replaced a light switch that is literally in my entertainment center. It is on the back wall of the built-in shelves that make up my entertainment center. Why anyone would install a light switch on the back wall of entertainment center shelves, I do not know. And so I finally remedied that situation by putting it, replacing it with an Insteon switch that I can control from a more logical location in my family room. So that was thing one. Thing two was that I installed speakers outside for the deck just in time for July 4th. Well, no, actually not just in time for July 4th, but nonetheless, just in time for the summer. And I hooked them into my Sonos system, which is pretty cool because it means that now I can extend anything that's playing on Sonos, which includes anything from my entertainment center, out onto the deck. And you know what I've learned when we have people over for a party is that apparently the kids listen to music on YouTube.
Yep.
I don't know why.
Because it's all there and it's free.
But now I can get the audio from a YouTube playlist out on the deck. So party on.
How did you do this? Because I thought there wasn't a way to just use whatever speakers you wanted with Sonos.
Well, there is if you either bring your own amp and use one of their connection modules. I prefer to call it their ridiculously overpriced Kinect modules.
I thought those weren't around anymore, though.
Oh, no, they exist. They exist. Oh. Or you could get their ridiculously overpriced Kinect module that comes with an overpriced amp, too. And I happen to have a small spare amp that's actually intended to be used in like car systems or something like that. And I just actually tied that into the output from the Sonos Kinect, and then that powers the amp, and we're good. Or that powers the speakers, and it's good. It's I'm really happy with the sound. I bought two outdoor Polk speakers, and the sound is pretty good for an outdoor space. So
cool.
Yeah, and that entailed approximately 2 hours of crawling around in my attic on a relatively hot day, but job's done. So happy about that. Meanwhile, watch some TV. The Royal Pains episode, the musical episode I was dreading, was surprisingly good. They did a really good job with it. And it just kind of reminded me I'm going to be bummed that this show ends, because it's just a nice little story that's been going on for, geez, like 7 or 8 years now. So sorry that that's going to be ending soon. We finished season 3 of Sleepy Hollow. I finished season 2 of Justified. We got back to watching Man in the High Castle, which kind of just fell off the radar at some point. So getting back onto that, watch the movie Olympus Has Fallen this weekend, largely because London Has Fallen was being heavily promoted in some of the movie stores. I'm like, well, I didn't see the original. So I watched the original. It was fun. It was a entertaining, kind of really gruesome terrorist plot to take over the White House movie, you know, as entertaining movies go.
That's the North Korean one?
Yes.
Because I think I saw this. I think Jenna and I went and saw this movie. And we thought it was pretty bad. Like, it was way over the top on violence, like violence for the sake of violence. And
yeah, it's
not
funny.
The most believable plot line.
The violence didn't bother me. I would say, yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it for whatever reason. Maybe I was just being kind of mindless. If anything, the thing that bothered me more than anything was like, I really wanted the bad guys to like have a long, long, painful death. And like the scenes where they finally got what was due them just weren't satisfying enough as far as I was concerned. Now, Big Brother, as I mentioned, that's going on. Let me say, talk about satisfying. The first Big Brother eviction was very satisfying. I was so happy with the results of that. And of course, that's 3 nights a week, so that's still going strong. We have new stuff coming up shortly. Tyrant season 3 starts this week. I'll be watching that. And Mr. Robot season 2, so excited, starts next week. Yay!
Yay.
That's it for me. How about you?
Not a lot, because of vacation and all that stuff. But while I was on vacation, we did sit down and watch a couple of movies. One night, we watched The Bourne Ultimatum, which I've seen a million times and I love, and I don't really need to talk about that. But one night we watched a movie that I hadn't seen, Jurassic World.
You hadn't seen that?
I had not seen this, because I'm just, Jurassic Park was cool 20 years ago, but Jurassic Park 2 wasn't any good, and I don't think I had seen any of the other ones since then.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of like Jurassic Park again.
Yes, but worse, and so many really, really bad and obvious plot holes. And it was like Jurassic Park, the product placement. Like, it was just so much product placement.
That could have been, in other words, the subtitle. Jurassic Park, colon, the product placement.
Yes.
Yeah.
we made this movie to sell it to advertisers. It was fine, but yeah, there were so many moments where we're just like, really, that's what you're gonna do? That's what you think is a good idea? This is what you care about right now in this moment? No. Yeah, it was a fun movie to sit around with you know, friends and family and poke fun at, but it wasn't like, I'm glad I didn't pay money to go see this in a theater.
Yeah, I agree with that. I enjoyed watching it on my own screen. I will say, if there's a fifth, I'm giving up, because it's like, how many times will it take before these people learn that this is a bad idea?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Because this is them reopening Jurassic Park again,
right?
And thinking we can do this better this time and make it interesting and cool, and we're sure nothing will go wrong this time.
Right.
It will always go wrong. They're freaking dinosaurs. But it, like, the very ending, the way that it finally ends, you know, the final confrontation is like comically hilariously over the top, and I did really enjoy that. I won't give any spoilers.
It really is. It's like one of those scenes where everywhere that they run to take cover, they're literally inches away from getting like hit or squashed or crushed or whatever else every single time. Oh, I'll go here, smash. Oh, I'll go here, smash. Oh, I'll go here. Almost got eaten. I mean, come on. Every single move they make.
What I really mean is the actual final conclusion to the incident that's happening at the end of the movie, and how that final, you can't really call it a battle, but how that thing
oh yeah
ends.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes, it is hilarious.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. All right.
Oh, Rye Guy's bringing up one of the earlier Jurassic Park movies. He says, I loved T-Rex in California. Yeah, I think, was that the second one?
Yeah, that was the second one.
Yeah, that was so bad. Let's take it. Everything's going bad on this island. Let's take the T-Rex to a populated continent.
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong?
So dumb. All right. Well, before we make this podcast any dumber by talking about even more stupid plot points, let's just end it. And
all right. Bye.
But first, I suppose we should probably give out our contact information. If you want to get a hold of us on Twitter, Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. On Facebook, facebook.com/TheDMZ. We're on Google+. The email address is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And Richard, I noticed that you finally held up sort of on your promise of releasing a Home On episode.
Not exactly sure what you mean by sort of. I think I did, in fact, get an episode out. Maybe not in the time frame I had suggested I might.
That's where the kind of comes in.
All right. Well, that episode where I said I'd be talking with somebody at WWDC about HomeKit. Yeah. Well, that's out there now. And you know what? I think it's still relevant because, as a matter of fact, people are still talking about HomeKit. So if you're interested in that, check that out on the Home On feed. And I need to take a breath. I need to take a little bit of a breath and figure out what's next, because I have a long list of stuff I want to dive into, and I'm not quite sure what the next couple of weeks are going to allow. So no promises yet.
All right, cool. Well, you can find all of our DMZ shows in iTunes and Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, pretty much any place that has podcasts, you ought to be able to find ours. And if you like them and you'd like to show your appreciation to us, the best way you can do that is head on over to iTunes. Yes, I know iTunes. You can't do this in dopamine yet. You got to do it in iTunes if you want to help us out. And leave us a rating or a review on any of those podcasts. It helps us out a lot, and we really appreciate it when you do that. And then if you want to be like Rye Guy and Sola Sweet and all of the other regulars and help us out while we're recording the show live, you can do that. Hear us while we're doing this. Hear our screw-ups and contribute to the show. That's really easy to do. We've got a live chat room and stream of the audio while we're recording this. That's usually Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We always tweet about when it's... We tweet when it's going to happen. So we'll give you a few hours notice, but it's usually Tuesday nights. But best to just follow us on Twitter to find out when exactly it's going to be. But that's going to do it for episode 374. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time for episode 375. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.